If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. As the season changes and I'm going from t-shirts to sweaters, I'm happy that my sunglasses can quickly change looks too with Pair Eyewear. Pair Eyewear offers infinite possibilities for both glasses and sunglasses, starting at just $60, including your prescription. Plus, you get 15% off by using code HEARTBREAK at PairEyewear.com. While I don't wear glasses, I've been loving my sunglasses. Having a big head and wider face makes it difficult for me to find frames that I love, and with Pair's virtual try-on, I fell in love with the Quinn frames. And now with fall in full swing, I have been using my tortoise top frames to change up my look. Top frames start at just $25, so you can switch up your look as often as you want. Fall into a new routine with infinite possibilities from Pair Eyewear. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code HEARTBREAK for 15% off your first pair. And support the show by mentioning that Heal Your Heartbreak sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PairEyewear.com, code HEARTBREAK. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome back to another episode of the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. I have an awesome expert episode for you guys today. Today I have Dr. Tara. She is a sexologist. She is a professor of human sexuality at Cal State Fullerton. And we had such a fun conversation talking about sex. We talked about where she became interested in the topic. We talk about how to sex can contribute to relationships not working. We talk about how to set a precedence of talking about sex when you're newly dating someone. We talked about sex with an ex, whether she thinks it's a good idea or not. Spoiler alert, and you won't be surprised by this, not a great idea. We talk about how to start exploring your sexuality if you're someone who has never taken the time to do that. She has a sexual identity quiz that I have put in the show notes for you guys that I highly recommend everyone taking. So I just loved her perspective on this topic, and it has a lot of really great concrete things that you can start incorporating in your life as someone who is single and is going through a breakup. And we also talked about, which I know a lot of people have asked me about, is what if you feel like you associate good sex with a toxic partner and how to break that pattern. So really, really excited to have her on the show. Welcome, Dr. Tara, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. So excited to have you on and to have this conversation today as it relates to breakups.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here, actually. I've had quite a few heartbreaks and breakups and even a divorce. So I am experienced in that arena.
Fortunately or unfortunately?
Both.
Both. Yeah, that's true. Both sides of the coin. I would first love to hear how you got into your line of work. Like, what made you feel passionate about sex and about helping people understand sex and learn about it? And I just would love to hear that background.
Yeah. So I'm a sexologist. My story goes way back to where I'm from. So I'm originally from Bangkok, Thailand. I grew up in a very sexually conservative culture. And I also went to school that was very, very conservative and repressive towards girls and women. So I went to an all-girls Catholic school where, you have to cover your wrists and cover your knees with clothing because it's shameful to be showing your knees or your
Or your,
wrists.
I've never even heard the wrist thing.
Yeah, we wear long sleeves and we cover our wrists. So, that's the context that I grew up in and spending really, pivotal years in, right? Like up until I finished middle school. So that's like the only frame of reference regarding like womanhood and our bodies and how to understand our sexuality. But when you're a teenager, like you're naturally horny. And I went to high school all the way in Finland. So going from like Thailand, which is very culturally conservative, to Finland, where people get naked all together to go to saunas, and it's a very like it's like a normal Tuesday. It was a huge culture shock. But what that led me to, really believe is that there isn't necessarily like right or wrong answer when it comes to dating, relationships, nudity, and sexuality. It depends on where you're at, and those places have, hundreds, if not thousands of years of how they come to have that meaning. So, in other cultures where matchmaking and arranged marriage is completely normal, and the other way around is completely not. Hookup culture and casual sex culture in college is perhaps very common in America, not very common in, other parts of the world. So I just learned through living in so many different places because then I moved to America for college after, and then my master's and my PhD, all in Western educated in America. So I just learned to appreciate people for where they're at. And where they want to go and what they want to learn and their level of curiosity. Because sometimes I tell people I'm a sexologist and they're so curious and they have so many questions. And sometimes they're just very uncomfortable and they walk away. So
Yeah.
I accept both responses because that's where they're at. And yeah, so all of that kind of inspired me to study human relationships. And that's what I studied in grad school. But when I started studying human relationships, believe it or not, the number one issue that all humans will have at some point in their relational life, in their romantic life, is a sex issue at some point in their lives. It's a very universal global issue. When for me, when I live around the world, like, oh, people are like different and they approach dating and relationship differently. But the one thing that is not different is sex. Everyone's having sex. That's how we're here. And the sex issues still persist in every culture, every co-culture, every country, nationality, racial background, socioeconomic status. So I was just inspired to dive deeper into sexology, and that's how I'm here. I'm a professor at Cal State Fullerton, actually not far from you in
Yeah,
Orange
right down the
County.
road. My husband went there.
Yeah. So I started teaching at Cal State Fullerton now for 8 years. So I'm a professor there, and I teach a course on human sexuality, and it's been really a blessing.
That's amazing. And that's very cool to be able to have such an open mind. Because I think there's probably a stereotype of people who, oh, you're a sexologist, you're obsessed with it. You can't see how anyone would be uncomfortable talking about it. But being able to say, no, I will meet you where you are. I understand some people, grew up in a space where you don't talk about sex. And that was one of my later questions for you, but since we're bringing it up now, what are some of the biggest issues that couples have with sex? I do think that's such a prevalent issue that can lead to, breakdowns of relationships and breakups. What do you think? What are some of the biggest issues that you see?
For long-term relationships, the number one issue is sexless relationship or passionless relationship. And that's a very big universal issue. I don't care who you are, what your racial background is, what how much money you make, all long-term relationships will like hit a spot at some point where they go, wow, we haven't had sex for X amount of time. And that X amount of time just depends on their threshold. For some people, they feel so bad they haven't had sex with their spouse or partner for 6 months. For some people, they haven't had sex for 5 years. I have clients in my private practice that go, we think we need help. And then I go, okay, tell me more. We haven't had sex for 5 years. So for me, it's a huge shock for personally, for me. But professionally, it's not because I've read in, all the sex therapy books, like some people haven't had sex for 10 years. So it's an interesting predicament for all relationships at some point, but it changes like how long it depends on the people and how distressing it is for them. For dating and short-term relationships, I would say sexual expectations. Especially when you're dating, it is very confusing nowadays because there's a whole hookup culture that is very alive and well and is going, even though media likes to say Gen Z is not having sex. Like
That's
they
what I
are.
actually, that was like a personal curiosity question that I wanted to ask you, because I'm like, I'm seeing two different things. Like, people aren't having sex and people are having a ton of sex and it's all casual. So what is it, you know?
They are having sex. I would say, the majority of Gen Zs are still looking to be in a relationship. But meanwhile, participating in casual relationships, situationships, very, very normal. Right. So they still have a goal of having a long-term loving relationship. But yeah, participating in like hookup culture, casual sex, or situationships, very, very normal and common. So yeah, that would be their issue is sexual expectation. So like if we're just talking, if I go see you, like, are we having sex? If you invite me over for Netflix, like, let's chill, let's, open a bottle of wine. Like, are we gonna end up having sex? So there's a lot of this like unspoken sexual scripts that have that's like ever changing, right? Because during like our parents' era, like the first few times courting, when they take them to ice cream or a movie or whatever, they're not having sex. That's known for sure. But nowadays it's kind of like whatever. Like if you're inviting me out for a glass of wine at 10 p.m., I might expect sex, right? So sexual expectation is a huge problem amongst dating and early relationships people.
That makes a lot of sense. And I want to go back to the long-term relationship. And I'm talking to people on the other side, the people that did not make it in their relationships. And a lot of times I'll hear the sex stopped, and then the relationship ended. Do you feel like when the sex stops, that it usually means like a bigger issue within the relationship? Or does it sometimes just people stop prioritizing their sex life? And, it doesn't necessarily mean that the relationship is quote unquote doomed. It just means that this is one aspect that needs to be worked out.
I would say the answer is both, and it
Yeah.
depends on the person.
Okay.
But yes, usually when the sex completely stops for an extended period of time, it is a symptom of other issues.
Okay.
Typically, attraction issue, respect issue, and like entitlement or taking for granted issue, which are all, a part of relational well-being overall. So when sex stops, it is an indicator that like it's like an engine light on. Like,
Got it.
we should
Yeah.
probably talk and check in because there might be respect issue, there might be like household chores issue, finances issue. I have a client who told me, and she was very ashamed for telling me this, but she wanted to break up with her boyfriend because he lost his job and he hasn't had the oomph to go out there and get it and like apply for more jobs, right? He spends his week, like every week he applies to like one job or two jobs. And so for her, seeing that moment for the last 3 months, she's like, I want to break up with him, but I feel bad. And I said, girl,
Yeah.
don't feel bad. This is, you only have one life. And if
Yeah.
this person's values are not aligned with you, it's completely fine. And you know what? She also stopped sex. She's like, I can't have sex with someone who's so lazy. Like, I didn't know that this part of him
Yeah, it's
exists.
like, I mean, I can see that you lose the attraction.
But she felt so guilty.
Yeah, that's very interesting because it, and as someone who has been in a long-term relationship now, like, there's just so many more factors that influence your desire to want to have sex. It's like you start
Totally.
thinking about, and then you throw kids in the mix and it just gets all wonky. But when it comes to these like expectations that we're talking about, I'm talking more now probably with people who are getting back into dating, and that's something that they feel nervous about are these unspoken expectations. And it is interesting because I don't know if you've ever heard that thing where it says, like, if you're mature enough to be having sex, you're mature enough to talk about sex, kind of a thing. Like, but it is so interesting. Like, we will actually have sex. Like, we'll have like this very intimate thing where we're,
Yeah.
but it's, we're too scared to talk about it beforehand or talk about it afterward. Or like, where does that disconnect come from?
Multiple reasons,
Okay.
but let's say top three. First is very strongly related to your cultural background. Some people grew up in a very like open-minded culture that talks about sex and nudity is not a problem. Then they don't have a problem talking about sex. When I went to school in Finland, my host mother asked, like, are you like, it seems like you're seeing this guy, this boy a lot. Are you having sex? Like, you know, for them, it's normal. It's a part of life, a part of growing up. My parents never talked to me about sex. My culture from Thailand, it's like very uncommon for parents to have this conversation. So culture is a big drive towards like whether or not you feel comfortable talking about sex. Second, there's a lot of research on family sex communication. And family sex communication theory states that when you grew up in a family that's more laid back and laissez-faire, you are more likely to feel sexually empowered as an adult. But if you grew up in a household where sex is repressed, then you are more likely to be an anxious lover when you grow up. So safe to say, if you grew up in a family where like if there's a sex scene in a movie, they like fast forward or they close your eyes or they, you know, they're so uncomfortable with themselves that they don't talk to their teenagers about safe sex, then yeah, you're gonna feel anxious talking about sex, and that's quite normal. And then the last factor is personality factor, and that you can't really change, but you can like enhance and improve. People say extroverts are more likely to communicate about sex than introverts. So if you're here listening and you're an introvert, don't think like, oh, I'm fucked. Like, no, you're not. Research just found that you're more likely to not talk about it. It doesn't mean you can't practice and start like adopting strategies to talk more about it.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I have a very specific memory of being in the movie theater watching The Notebook with my mom
Yeah.
and my best friend, and she literally covered my eyes during the sex scene in The Notebook. But, and like,
Even
I've
though
have.
it's such a normal thing, right?
It's
It's like
such
the
a normal
reason why
thing.
you're here is, yeah. But yet, you know, when the parents are uncomfortable with themselves, they tend to do that. But that's why, you know, one of the most rewarding parts of my job is actually teaching my college students. So, like at Cal State Fullerton, we have quite a mix of like just regular age college students. Like, we also have a lot of people that like return to college from work. And they are older, and some of them may have young children. It's so rewarding to like talk to them about family sex communication and teach people how to talk to their kids about sex because it's so important. And now the next generation will not have sexual anxiety, thanks to us, right? We can change so that our kids feel more comfortable.
I think that's so important. And as someone who, like, I've had a lot of stuff that I've had to work through in that arena because of how I grew up. And that's something that I would love to change moving forward in, like, my family unit. So when someone's starting to date again and they want to work on, talking about sex, or they want to just work on not, or they just want to break some patterns, I think there's the one thing I wanted to ask you is there's, I feel like there's this myth that you shouldn't sleep with someone during a certain period of time because at that point it like clouds your judgment. Do you believe that to be true? Is that something that you think that is worth waiting for so it doesn't cloud your judgment?
So, I'm going to explain to you the two school of thoughts because it's super interesting. In research, there's two school of thoughts, and it's and whether or not you subscribe to one of them, like your behavior pattern will lie within one of them, and your values and attitude will lie within one of them. So, the first one is the sexual restraint school of thought. So, the sexual restraint school of thought thinks that, or like sexual restraint theory thinks that, you know, early sex is bad because it clouds your judgment, because it takes time to build emotional connection with someone in order to enjoy the sex you have with them. And that's the first school of thought. And so when people subscribe to this school of thought, they are the people that tend to wait longer, that is very uncomfortable with like sex on a first date or even on a second date, and in general is more uncomfortable talking about sex early on in the relationship. And that's just like, there's no wrong answer. It's just that's how you are. And then the other school of thought is the sexual compatibility theory. And this is the group of people that care a lot about sexual compatibility in order to move forward in a relationship with someone. Like, sex is their top three priority. So they are going to want to measure their sexual compatibility right away by having sex with someone. And so for these people that subscribe to the second school of thought, it is very normal for them to want to have sex on the first date. And maybe on a second date, but very early in dating, because they want to determine right away if this person is sexually compatible with them or not. So there is that school, and there's the first school. So it just depends on which school you subscribe to. But the sexual misunderstanding comes in when you have two people from different schools and you're going on a date. And especially if you had like a big breakup and there's a lot of repair that had to be made. There can be that sense of insecurity going into dating again. And that will also come into play when the other person doesn't have the same like sexual thoughts, like of school of thought as you, because you could feel already insecure. Go in to try to date again. Oh, match with this person. He's attractive. Like, let's go on a date. I'm so excited. I'm nervous. Show up. You know, maybe you are in the sexual restraint school. And you just want to have a good time just to see if we vibe well and collect data, right? Like to see if there's some kind of emotional connection that can be established. But then this person might be from sexual compatibility school, so they started being more touchy. They touch your hand, they touch your thigh. They want to invite you back to their apartment after dinner. And so what do you do? Right, because then now you're from different schools and you believe in different things fundamentally. So what do we do here? That's a big question. Like, what would
Yeah.
you do?
I know we all have certain people in our lives that are very hard to shop for. For me, that has always been my dad. And for those people in my life, I love gifting Masterclass. With Masterclass, your loved ones can learn from the best to become their best. Masterclass is the only streaming platform where you can learn and grow with over 200 of the world's best. That's why Wirecutter calls it an invaluable gift. As someone who has used Masterclass, the amount of knowledge and expertise on this site is incredible. So far, my two favorite classes that I've taken is Robin Arzón on building mental strength and Esther Perel, who we love, on relational intelligence. 88% of members have felt that Masterclass made a positive impact on their lives. The classes really make a difference. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/heartbreak for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/heartbreak. Masterclass.com/heartbreak. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. This has been a tough year for me, adding my twin boys into my life, and there's one person that I owe a huge thank you to, and that's my best friend Alexis, who has been there for me every step of the way. This month is all about gratitude, and along with my best friend, I know there's one person I don't thank enough, and I would bet you don't either, and that's yourself. In all the craziness of life, especially in the midst of a breakup, it is so easy to ignore all of the incredible things that you're doing every single day and all of the amazing qualities that you have. Therapy has always been a great place for me to pause and reflect on the things I can appreciate about myself. It's also great to have an outside perspective who can see me in ways that I can't see myself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Let gratitude flow with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/heartbreak today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/heartbreak. You know what can make breakups even harder than they already are? PMS. I don't know about you, but my PMS gives me such bad anxiety, racing thoughts, and a lot of bloating, all of which is a recipe to make a breakup feel that much more intense. To help combat my PMS symptoms, I've been loving Estro Control by Happy Mammoth, a supplement company dedicated to making women's lives easier. Estro Control contains science-backed herbal extracts that help support hormonal health, especially in women who suffer from PMS. I was so interested to learn how this supplement worked. It actually helps support the liver, which is where hormones are processed. And when estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, that's what causes those awful PMS symptoms. So to help combat your PMS symptoms, I highly recommend Estro Control so you're not robbed of a week of your life every single month. Not fair. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today.
That's really hard. I mean, so I think at one point I would definitely like go along with, you know, especially going into it with insecurities around dating. So I think it would really depend on my state of mind going into the date, because if I was feeling very confident with myself, I could easily be, you know, say, no, not, you know, not tonight. But I do think it really does depend on like my level of confidence and security.
You're absolutely right, because people that are people pleasers tend to go along with it and then have sex, but then have this bad taste in their mouth, right? Like, I gave up something.
Yes.
And they don't feel good afterwards. They might even feel like a little bit icky and dirty afterwards, even if the sex was good and it was connecting. And compound that with, if that didn't go well, the other person doesn't call you back. Like, right? Because that person's goal was to test sexual compatibility. If the sex was kind of good, but maybe that person determines like, oh, this is not the kind of sexual compatibility I'm looking for, they might ghost you or not text you back or text you very short. That could then compound with how you already feel being a people pleaser and had sex with them just because they wanted it to. Then now that's a big problem. And that's where we're at, right? That's where, you know, a lot of my therapist friends say that a lot of people come in to heal from being a people pleaser because it has, you know, butterfly effect, if you will.
That's such a good point. And it's so it sounds like having an awareness of the kind of person that you are is very important. And, you know, as someone who is a people pleaser, me, I know for me, setting expectations, not even with the person, just like setting my own expectations ahead of time, like, hey, this is going to, you know, not even, I have, honestly, if I'm being honest, like take it completely away from sex. If I'm walking into a grocery store and I see someone like soliciting out front, and I know that when I go out from the grocery store, I'm going to be asked like to sign something, I have to really build myself up to be like, okay, they're going to ask you and you're going to say no, and it's going to be okay. But I do have to, you know, so having the awareness of what kind of person you are is important. And, you know, it might be like, I don't know, for people pleasers, it might be a good idea to wait a little bit. I don't know, maybe a little bit longer to date after a breakup.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, what do you think? Like, how long in general should people wait before they date again?
I think it's so hard to say because there's, I'm sure you see this, there's people that are coming out of long-term marriages where in their mind the relationship was over 2 years ago, you know, and they have no problem dating again, and that's fine. And then there are some people who go through these, you know, quick 6 month whirlwind romances and they're kind of out for like the next 6 months to a year. And that's, so I think it just, I can never give an answer to that. It's just so hard. But I always tell people it's, I think it's something that you can try. You can dip your toe back in, and if it doesn't feel good, or if you start, if you feel really insecure by it or makes you feel anxious, then you can take a step back and try again later. But one thing I wanted to ask your opinion on is, what do you feel about friends with benefits post breakup when you are in that? Because I'll hear this where people will be going through breakups. They know they don't want to date or be in a relationship again, but they're horny. They want to have sex and
I was in that space.
So what do you, like, what do we do?
I would say yes. I would say do it, girl. Have your hoe face. And like, if it comes from an empowering space, like, this is my body. I want to experience orgasms and pleasure. And I don't want to be dating and maintaining and taking care of people. If it comes from that space, you should totally do it and have fun, right? Yeah. But you also need to be checking in with yourself a lot. Like, talking to yourself, right? Intrapersonal communication, like talking with yourself, is so important because you can be trapped in this, like, oh, I'm now in a new quote unquote relationship because I'm in a friends with benefit relationship, but actually I'm developing an attachment to this person.
Yeah.
Then you're kind of effed and you put yourself in that position.
Totally.
So it is really important to continue to check in internally, like, okay, I'm just having fun. I'm just having fun. I'm being safe and it's consensual and pleasurable and there's no shame regarding that. I had so much fun. After like my huge breakup, the biggest breakup of my life, I went to Europe with my friends and I had a little bit of a, quote unquote, Euro trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had, a French man, Italian man, and a Greek man. It was fun. It was so much fun. I did not want to be in a relationship with any of those people. They were really hot and attractive, and I appreciated them for that moment. But
Yeah.
that was it, because I was traveling with my friends. So I'm like, okay, 2 days later, peace out from that city. So for me, that was healing. And I know that it sounds controversial because some people were like, oh, but after a breakup, you shouldn't really be, quote unquote, giving up yourself. But that's not my identity. And that's not how I view this. How I view my body and having sex is it's recreational and it's empowering. So if you view it as it's a gift that you're giving someone and you're giving it up, then that's a completely different attitude from me, right? Which I personally think that attitude has so much pressure and slightly repressive for women. If you think it's something that you give up, that it's like, oh, a gift that you have to give someone versus it's a co-shared experience that you're sharing with someone cool, which is my attitude at the time. And now with like being married with my now husband, we often talk about like what our sexual fantasies are, what are we looking forward to exploring in the future? Because sex isn't just about now, right? Like being in the now and focusing in the moment when you have sex is extremely important. But when outside of sexual encounter, it's important to talk about what we can potentially explore. And if you are now in a relationship, whether it's just starting or in a long-term relationship, it's worth a try. Like it's worth a conversation of like, do you have sexual fantasies? Like, what are some of your sexual fantasies that you're comfortable sharing? Like, no judgment, right? And have this kind of conversation. It can be very bonding.
And I think like s people starting relationships, it's such a, I don't know, my whole thing lately on the podcast, we've been talking a lot about dating, and it's using dating as like a lab to practice in. And, you know, when you're in the spot of, you know, you're not, I don't know. You don't know where it's going to go with this person. It's a good time to practice. Okay, I didn't talk about sex at all in my last relationship. Let me try doing this a little bit differently and just see, you know, just see how it works. And I loved what you said too about having it be an empowering experience. And I was listening to, I forgot what podcast it was. I was listening to another podcast, and they were talking about this idea of how we tell specifically girls about your virginity being this like
Like a
gift, you
gift.
know, and then if it doesn't, and then if your first experience isn't this like magical thing with someone you love, then you feel like then you're made to feel guilty about it.
Shame.
Yeah. And there's shame around it. And I loved what you said too about if you want to have that experience, do it without shame, because there's nothing worse than in, you know, wanting to do something, enjoying it, but then feeling like you shouldn't be enjoying it. So then you're at odds with yourself, and you're ruining the experience for yourself. At that point, like, you might as well just not do it.
At that time, I love talking to my sex coach, like sex therapist, because I've always been a sexually active person and someone that, is looking to explore outside of the traditional norm of what sex is, and have always felt really ashamed and guilty that, like, I have this desire. In my first marriage, I got married in my 20s, and I didn't feel confident or comfortable enough to, like, share with him, like, who I really was. And so, of course, it ended in the biggest breakup, divorce. But I just can't blame him. Like, I was the person that did not want to share who I actually was. But I knew from talking to him that if I had shared, he wouldn't have agreed. Like he has very completely different values and attitudes toward sex. So for me, knowing your sexual attitudes is so important as like just a human being experiencing life, like, in a short-term relationship, long-term relationship, even going through a breakup, to know like what your sexual attitude is and what your sexual profile is very empowering. So you know who you are sexually. I don't know if we shared with you, but like I just have this free quiz that you can take and it will tell you what your sexual profile is. It's
Oh, I
kind of like a
love
sex
that.
personality test.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll make sure to
So
put that link in the show notes. That's
yeah.
awesome. And what a great time to be able to explore it when you're single and you're going through a breakup where like you don't really have a partner to influence the answers.
Yeah, it's an amazing time because yeah, you don't think about, oh, should I answer a certain way because my partner is a certain way.
Yeah.
Like you're
Yeah.
just you, and like just answer every question the most honest possible. Then you'll get the most honest answer, and then you'll know that's who you are. And it's a good point of conversation because then you can be like, hey, so I took this quiz and this is who I am. Like, what about you? Right? It's kind of like Myers-Briggs personality test. I'm
Yeah.
ENFJ. Have you taken
I'm
that one?
ENFJ too.
Oh, I can feel it too.
I know
I
we're
can feel
I
like
know
you're
we're
in
vibing.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, how funny. Yes, I'm ENFJ. But no, it's so like we take so many when my husband and I we did like a very light form of marriage counseling, but we did take a
Yeah.
test. And actually one
Yeah,
of
yeah.
the aspects was like sexual compatibility, which was great because it's like you don't necessarily think about that. You think of, okay, how are we going to handle finances and raising kids and
Yeah.
religion and like all these things? But we don't, again, maybe because it's considered taboo, but we don't necessarily, think about, okay, in 15 years when sex is getting, a little on the,
Yeah.
on the downturn, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to feel comfortable talking about it? Are we going to switch it up? That kind of a thing. As we're nearing the end, I want to talk about exes specifically. So, two questions. First question is, what are your thoughts on sleeping with an ex? Like,
Are
let's
you
say
friends
we have
now?
that sexual drive,
Yeah.
and it makes sense that your ex is the first person you think about because that was like your most recent history. What'd you say? Did you ask, are you friends?
Yeah, like my first question would be like, are you friends now? How long have you been friends? Or is this like pretty fresh and this is like a rebound sex? If it is, I would say no. It's
I'd say
better to like
probably
stay
more likely
home
a
and
rebound.
yeah, don't have sex with your ex. Like stay home and masturbate. You
Yes.
probably have a more reliable orgasm than having sex with your ex, really. Having sex with your ex is probably mainly for validation and comfort, but masturbating at home is for pleasure and oxytocin, which is much better for you.
Okay, I love that. Okay,
Yeah.
my big question around exes is I think some people coming out of a breakup, and maybe they can recognize that the relationship wasn't great, but they think to themselves, the sex was so good. And I'm not saying this is a blanket statement and applies to everyone, but what I tend to see is people that are coming out of toxic relationships will say, this person was so not good for me, but the sex was so good. And I don't know how I'm ever going to be able to find something like that. So people make this association of I can only have good sex either with my ex or I can only have good sex with someone who I fight with a lot or, those kind of associations. What can we do about that? And how can we start, reprogramming that so we don't have that association?
I love this question, and reprogramming is definitely the way to go. So, there's not a lot of difference between passion and chaos, because there's a lot of heat and passion within chaos. When you think of like the yin and yang energy, like the calmness and the heat and the assertiveness and the crazy, like chaotic relationship has a lot of passion in it. And that's just the natural like way of living. So if you think good sex is these like hot, heated, passionate sex, and you have that with your toxic partner, like, of course, you're gonna think like that relationship has great sex. However, I challenge you to reprogram yourself to know that good sex doesn't involve chaos. Like, you can be in a very stable and loving relationship and have amazing, passionate sex. And with that, you have to insert novelty and creativity into your sex life. Because you might think, oh, this relationship is so stable, so our sex is boring. Like, this is not synonymous. There's a lot of people in stable relationship that have hot, taboo, kinky sex. It's your job to change and reprogram yourself and then take initiative in making your sex life with a stable partner more fun, exciting, and perhaps even chaotic. Right? But it can be within, contained within your sexual experiences with this loving, stable, healthy partner. So, yeah, there is a correlation between toxic relationship and having great sex, but it's only because your definition is like passion and chaos is the same.
Going back to what we were talking about with people having this block of communicating about sex, it's almost like in a toxic relationship, you don't necessarily have to communicate to have that like electric, chaotic sex, where in a stable relationship, you do have to have some conversations around it. So I feel like there's a tie-in with that too, where it does require you to say, hey, this is what I'm into. This is what I want to try. Can we do that?
Yeah, like you can create the kind of sex life you want in a stable, loving relationship versus this fleeting, hot, passionate sex in a toxic relationship, which, by the way, won't stay because that, like, a hot, heated, like, sex, it doesn't stay. It doesn't, it's not that long. It doesn't last that long.
Also, like if you think about waking hours and how many hours you're having to spend with versus how many hours you're spending having sex, there's a big difference. There's a lot of time spent not having sex where you have to live with someone who's not good for you. So, my very last question for you is for someone who's coming out of a relationship and they're open to exploring this more sexual side to themselves, and maybe they do come from a culture where it was pretty repressed and that's never even something they've like considered or thought about. What's some ways that people can start opening their mind and asking themselves those questions? I mean, that quiz sounds like a great place to start, but what are some ways that people can start embracing that part of themselves when it's been pushed down for so long?
I mean, there are four like easy ways to embrace more sex positivity in your life. First is to increase your sexual self-knowledge, and this can be done through like taking the quizzes and learn more about who you are sexually. It can be done through like reading sexuality books, like Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski is a good book about female sexuality. And then secondly is started practicing sexual mindfulness activities. This can be sexual meditation, sexual breath work. There's a whole like realm of like Eastern healing and philosophy that's involved within like becoming more sexually empowered. So you can definitely check out like sexual meditation. I have completely free guided sexual meditation on YouTube that you can check it out if
Amazing.
it helps you. It's only 5 and 10 minutes, so it's like super easy. The third one, it would be surround yourself with more sex positive content. So this can be like listening to sex positive podcasts. It could be watching like sex education, that show on Netflix, just being more exposed to sex positive ideas and people that talk about sex. And then lastly, communication is liberation. Like if you think about becoming more sexually liberated, it's just to like slowly start talking about sex. And it can be maybe with your sister, maybe with your best friend, but it's just very simple questions. It can be like, do you masturbate? Or like, you know, because I ask my friends that and sometimes they jump and sometimes they're like, ooh, we're gonna get there. Like, you know, do you masturbate? Like, how many times a week do you masturbate? Like, how many vibrators do you have? Like, just very simple questions that are very personal and allows you to feel like confident saying and bond with your friend because it is something taboo. And so when you talk about it, you bond stronger with your friends. I would say when you start having like small talk about sex, that's a really big step for people becoming more sex positive.
I love that. Those are such good concrete
So,
tips that people can
Kendra,
follow.
how many times a week do you masturbate?
Oh my gosh. It's been so I had twins this year. So I have three kids
Oh,
under three.
congrats.
Thank you. So it's been, we've slowed down a lot. I'd say I'm
Yeah.
like once a month at this point. So
Masturbating or having sex?
masturbating. I'd say sex is a
Masturbating.
little, the last couple of months we've gotten more up there,
Yeah.
sex, but this is not my sex year.
Yeah, no, and that's okay. Sometimes it's your sex year, sometimes it's not your sex year.
Totally. So I'm like, I'm not in my sex chapter right now, but I'm loving this conversation. I feel like it's really, even the last four things you were saying with me, I'm like, this is, I feel like I'm gonna have that, maybe not next year, but the next, like, I'm gonna have this re-identification, like
Rebirth.
figuring out who I am, post having little babies. And so this is all such good stuff to think about.
Take the sexual profile quiz and have your husband take it too, so then you can talk about it.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, we're definitely going to do that. Okay, so I'm going to link that in the show notes. Can you tell people where they can find website, Instagram, all of that?
Yes, so my website is lovebites.co. That's LUVBITES.CO. You can get my like YouTube, Instagram, TikTok from my website.
Amazing. Okay, well, I had so much fun talking with you. So
Thank
I
you.
loved getting to know you and hearing all your wisdom. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Have an orgasmic day.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.